This is Mona Lisa Baseball.
Welcome to the show, A12. You've got yourself a name, Anonymous 12.
Wow. 12 is a great number.
Yeah, it's not by accident that you were chosen for an interview. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you are a professional athlete?
Yeah, I think I do still identify as a professional athlete, even though I've sort of passed this stage of my career as a professional athlete where it's the only thing that I do as an income. So I feel like there was a period of time where I was only a professional athlete, and now I'm a coach and still a professional athlete at certain times.
Have you ever played against, say, the best people in the world at your sport?
Yeah, I played in one PGA Tour event. It was 2010 Fries.com Open, San Jose, California, not too far from where I grew up in Santa Cruz. And although Tiger Woods played in that exact event at that same venue in 2011, he was not there the year that I qualified for that event, but it was 50 of the top 100 players in the world.
Who's your most memorable meeting or handshake, we'll say?
I would have to say at the time, I think I was probably most starstruck by Ricky Fowler. I think Ricky Fowler had just come back from playing in the Ryder Cup the week before.
Whoa.
At, I think it was Celtic Manor in Ireland, probably a 7-hour time difference. And he was up early and he was in the gym early. And I was thinking, wow, a young kid just got done playing the Ryder Cup, playing an event on the PGA Tour that didn't really seem to be one of the premier events. And he seemed like he was treating it like the US Open. And I was kind of looking at it going, this kid's going to be something, you know, he's had a good career since.
Do you have any idea why I wanted you on the show?
I listened to the show. I haven't listened to every episode, probably more than half.
So what's the gist?
When I think about the gist of Mona Lisa Baseball, I think one of the things that I got from playing a professional sport is sort of, you know, like asking the question, what is the point of a sport? Or what is the point of a game? Or what is the point of competition? Like in the larger sense. You know, like, what are we doing here? And baseball, just like any other game, sport, competition, has so much to offer. When I think of Mona Lisa Baseball, I think of just like a larger issue that's going on in the world where the professional sport of baseball is taking over the game of baseball. Just like I think the professional sport of golf is taking over, or you could say ruining, what's at the heart of the game. There's so many things that people can get out of playing a game and competing against either their friends or another team and playing hard and then shaking their hand at the end of the game. I mean, there's a lot that we get out of that as humans. And it's like when you're playing a game like baseball, you could say something like, well, we're lucky enough not to be at war. So,
yeah.
We want to go out and compete against the people on the other side of the field. And then at the end of the game,
we got.
Yeah, you take your hat off and you shake your hand and you're both better for it because you know that they're giving it everything they have and you're giving it everything you have and you want to win so badly. We were just talking before the show downstairs and there was something about playing in a competition and not letting up. I had said something along the lines of, when I'm playing a match against an opponent, say I'm playing match play in golf, and I'm on the 12th hole or something like that, and I'm 5 up, I mean, I'm looking to like bury this person, you know? I want to bury them till they feel like there's no hope. And when I finish, I'm going to take my hat off and I'm going to shake their hand, and I'm hopeful that they see that I tried my hardest, but that I respect that they tried their hardest. And whether I win or lose, let's say I lose to somebody that really gave me like a whooping on the golf course, I could have a choice to say, wow, I suck and I'm just not good enough to make it in this game. Or I could turn around and go home and lick my wounds and wake up the next day and work a little bit harder so that when I get another opportunity to compete against this person or whoever, that competition is going to make me better. this competition, as what I think of it, at the very, very core of it, it's to lift each other up. You know, you think about like two fists pushing against each other. The one that loses actually got to work harder than the one that wins, because the one that wins never had to go to its max, but the one that loses is trying to push as hard as it can, and that fist actually gained more. And so the next time it goes out, and now it's stronger. And so you think about competition as far as to raise your game and lift each other up. And that's sort of the way that I look at it. At the kind of the very core of baseball, you've got pitcher trying to throw a ball past the batter, batter trying to hit it. There's something happening there, right? And I think that's a benefit. And so when I think about Mona Lisa Baseball, I hear both sides of this. Now I'm going to bring this word into the podcast because it's been something that I've been wanting to bring in. You know, it's capitalism, right? And so what is capitalism doing to these games that we love so much? And to me, this is the question that Mona Lisa Baseball is asking. What is capitalism doing to these wonderful games that we love so much?
Okay, well, let's start with your area of expertise. Let's go with golf. What's capitalism doing to golf?
Wow. Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that.
A smidge loaded?
I think it would be easier to ask what it's doing to baseball, but I can try to work through it, you know, because what's going on in golf?
Well, you just make it sound so clear that it's happening to both.
It keeps going to bigger levels, and I don't really know where to start it, but it's like, let's just start with, you know, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Taylor Swift, like extreme fame and sort of like its role in the world. But I'll just pull it back to America, you know, and like, what is the benefit and what is the downside of having superstars? And what does that do to us as adults? And what does that do to our children? And then how does social media now kind of play into that, where everybody can be their own hero? You know, everybody has fans, everybody has followers, everybody gets likes. Yeah, I mean, that's on like the largest level of the question of like, what is it like to be a superstar? When you play the game now at like a very young age, a lot of young men and young women, it's like, well, I want to be the best baseball player ever. I want to play in the majors. I want to play on TV.
I'm going to be the next Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
We've all heard it.
Right. I'm going to be the next Tiger Woods.
That's a bar. That's a hell of a bar.
And the kid wants it, and the parent might actually believe that they're the next Tiger Woods, or the parent might kind of say something like, I know that you want to be the next Tiger Woods, but if you get a college scholarship, that's great. And I think that that's sort of like the healthy balance on that level. But this kind of like extreme stardom, it's like, I think that it's unhealthy for the world.
To be a star or to attain to be, or to sort of get swept up by the almost certainty of the false hope.
I just think that the concept of having extreme stardom is a dangerous thing. I think that owners of baseball teams and owners, they know that. They know that people want stars, and so they sort of like play into that. I mean, think about the cover of EA Sports Baseball or the cover of Tiger Woods Golf on video games, and there's a lot that kind of goes into like, this guy's a superstar, and or this woman's a superstar, and you could be that too. There's so much money involved with that that I think kids just grow up wanting to make millions of dollars and be a superstar. And I think that we're sort of like losing out on the whole point that your family and your community, if you just worry about that, the world would probably be like a way better place. If you were more concerned with like the 30 people that were closest to you and then like your greater community. But it just gets so big so fast that, you know, I heard you talking about like this young man who was running around the bases in the Little League World Series and like did the lotus position sitting on third base. And I was telling you that if I was a coach, I would have told one of the kids in my dugout to go run out and tackle him, you know, because that would have pissed me off, you know.
I love that answer so much.
But the problem is that that kid is probably a YouTube sensation. So as much as the other kids in that league may hate him, he's probably known by a lot of kids at his school and a lot of parents in his community is like, oh, this kid's that YouTube star, and I'm betting he's getting more of a benefit from it than a negative, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like that type of behavior is being fed by social media, by like extreme stardom of like, well, now he's a superstar.
Earlier you had said you identified as a pitcher. I want you to tell me more about that.
For base?
As a ball player. He said, I was a pitcher. That's kind of how you identified yourself first. What do you remember of old memories of pitching, or what makes you think that first? Was that your favorite part of the sport?
I like the motion of pitching. I like sort of the idea of like throwing a ball as hard as you could. It's kind of like golf, trying to hit it as hard as you could. I mean, you're obviously, you have to aim it, right? Playing golf and pitching, there's a lot of places that run parallel because you have to aim it, but you also want to throw it hard. It's not just like, I'm going to swing as hard as I can or throw as hard as I can. I don't care where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back, it's like, I wonder if that's where that sort of like extreme competitiveness started in me, wanting to throw the ball past these other kids and just have these kids that I was a small kid. There was nothing about these other kids that I was pitching to that were smaller than me, but like I always kind of looked at them and was like, I've got an older brother and I play with baseball with his friends, and these are just like lame kids, and I'm just gonna like blow smoke past them. And that was sort of like my mentality. And even my brother had said something like, hey, if early in the game you throw and like hit somebody in the ankles or throw really far inside, every kid will probably back up a little bit and you'll be dialed the rest of the game. So just kind of like, don't be afraid early on to like throw a couple pitches that make kids jump up. It's not like my brother was telling me to throw at anybody's head or anything. Usually at some point in the first inning, I would throw a pitch at somebody's ankles. And
I had none of that. When I plunked a kid, I felt so bad. I felt so bad. I couldn't believe it that I could miss the target that bad. I wouldn't quite say devastating, but I could never believe it after it happened. I just beamed the guy. Did it ever occur to you that a coach would go up to you and ask if you wanted to pitch today or hit? You can't do both?
Definitely not. I mean, definitely not. I like doing both. It always felt like that was the game, you know, like you go play in the field and then you go sit in the dugout and wait for your turn. And when it's your turn, you know, and
so simple.
Yeah.
You go in the field, you come into the dugout.
Yeah. And that's interesting because I haven't thought of that since I played Little League baseball. And that was, you know, I stopped playing baseball basically when I found golf. And so I think the last year that I played, I was maybe 12. Mm-hmm. I never played in Pony League. I think majors was the last thing that I played. I just remember really liking pitching, and then I don't think I liked batting as much, but it always felt like it's baseball. It never occurred to me that you could choose to only do one. You know what I mean? Like it was like, this is baseball. It's like being a basketball player and being like, oh, I'm only defense. It's like, I mean, what are you going to do? Sub me in every 20 seconds? It's like, you're on
the stay on this end of the court.
Right. Yeah. It's like, you know, in golf, if you, like when you got to the green, if you just like said, I'm going to take my auto two putt and then just like pick up and go to the next tee. And it's like, it's part of the game.
I get the sense that you think the competition in professional sports right now is less than, say, any time previous. I almost hear you saying people are getting soft or something. I can't quite detect what it is, but it sounds like you feel like true, I'm going to beat your ass competition isn't maybe as high revving as it was earlier in our lives.
It's almost impossible to have the competition be as strong as it was when players were making, you know, $50,000 a year and had to have jobs in the off season, right? Where like, if you were on a good team, you probably got paid more. You probably got playoff bonuses that like actually made a difference for you and your family. And I think it's the same thing in golf. I've heard some amazing stories from players in golf that knew Ben Hogan personally and talking about like how multiple times in his early in his career, he was down to his last dollar and he like won the Oakland Open to like get enough money so that he could like put gas in his car and get to the next event. And so it's like when people are looking at like, I have to go get a job if I don't play well in this golf tournament, and to like have that feeling and then looking at other guys that are literally like stealing food off your plate where like everybody right now on the PGA Tour is making over $1 million. And then that's not even getting into the whole LIV Golf thing, which, I mean, I don't know if we want to get into that on this show, but it's like LIV Golf is this sort of Saudi Arabia backed tour that's calling themselves a world tour that Greg Norman has been talking about for 30 years, that finally Greg Norman got into this kind of marriage with the Saudis, and they're building this tour that they want to be the world tour. And so they're kind of plucking players away and just giving them signing bonuses that are hundreds of millions of dollars, right? Nine figures or something, right?
Like DJ got 200 mil.
Right.
Yeah.
And John Rahm just signed too. He was kind of like number one player in the world, went over there to LIV. And does any of it matter? You can say what you want to say about Saudi Arabia, and I'm going to put myself in a box with probably this statement, but it's like, I mean, Saudi Arabia, there's a lot of like human rights issues there. We won't get into anything besides like their treatment of women, right? I think you can just start there, and we can, you could go into other areas of life. This country that doesn't treat women as equals, not even close, is going to pay you $200 million to come play on their tour. And you're just kind of go, well, I mean, it's going to set me up, as if the like $30 million that you're making on the PGA Tour wasn't enough or something like that. And it just all kind of starts to point back to professional sports is all about capitalism. It's all about money. And personally, as a former professional golfer, now a golf coach, it's like the golf games that I'm most concerned about are now my own golf game, because I love playing golf, and the golf games of my friends and my students. If any of those people want to talk to me about their golf games, I'm all ears. I'd love to do it. And if somebody wants to talk to me about Justin Thomas, how he can't putt, he had the worst year on this PGA Tour career last year and finished 46 on the money list. It's like, I don't really care about any of those guys. I'm looking at what I can do in my own community. I'm looking at what golf can do for me as a game. And I'm just noticing that my level of interest in professional sports is decreasing every year, because it seems to me that it's all about the money. And I know that not all the players feel that way, that it's all about the money, but there's just too many of them that appear to be playing the game for more money than they would ever actually need in their lifetime. And I don't think that it's a healthy way to have a society, to have people making that much money.
You made me think of imagining a kid finally getting to go to his first ball game, and he sees Lou Gehrig playing first base, and Lou hits a home run, and the crowd really loves Lou, and they cheer for him in a way they don't cheer other people. And the kid goes, wow, I want to be a ball player. I'm imagining that kid wanting to recreate what's going on in the diamond, being able to dig in there against the best pitcher, smack it out of the park, hear applause for you. I can't imagine that kid thinking, I wonder how much money Lou Gehrig's making. Or, wow, if I was doing that, I'd be making X amount. I imagine the kid thinking, if he could be the one out there on the diamond performing, that would be the greatest thing that could ever happen to him. I just can't really imagine people feeling that way now, because, well, I guess it's such a big story. Shohei signs for $700 million and every corner of the globe is talking about it.
Think about it this way. When you hear kids say that, because I feel like I can picture a number of kids that have said that to me at different periods of my lifetime, and it's like almost endearing to hear a kid say something like, if I was as good as Lou Gehrig, I could buy whatever car I wanted to. When I was really young, before I wanted to play professional golf, I was a basketball player. And I thought, if I could play in the NBA, I would have my own half-court gym, you know, at my house, which was just like the ultimate. I would have made it at that. You know, if you make $200,000 a year for 5 years, then you could probably afford a house to have like half court indoor gym, which is like, and I'm still there. It's like, you know, I mean, yeah, it's just going to sound so lame, but it's like, you know, it just sounds so cliche and so lame, but it's, oh, like,
I can't, you know, wait. I can tell it's from the heart.
Does any baseball player need to be making more than $500,000 in a year?
You're laughing. Sounds like no.
I don't care about what the owners are making. I don't care about any of those people. Like screw all those people. If every baseball player in the major leagues, just from being in the majors, got paid $500,000, would any kid be less interested? It's like, hey, you could have a job as a professional baseball player traveling around playing a kid's game, and you're getting $500,000 every year.
Yep.
Right? And it's like, yeah, guess what? After you play for a couple of years, you're probably going to be able to afford a house, which is awesome. You know, and it's like, are you going to have a Corvette if you want, you know? And then it's like, what do we need beyond that to be playing a kid's game?
No, that's really good because you hear it with almost every LIV golfer. You know, I can provide for my family now. I can provide for my family now. And presuming that the $50 million in the bank account before was like, you were getting by, but kind of needed that over the hump amount that got you there, and LIV helped get you there. That can actually sound commonplace, where you can just throw that out there, provide for my family, and then any number counts. But that's complete nonsense.
I think that was the Latrell Sprewell quote that said, I make a lot of money, but I spend a lot too.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Right. I think he came out and also had a turn down like a 3-year, $7 million a year, you know, 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and said, I got to feed my kids.
Right.
And people,
right.
people didn't like that line.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to explore that for a sec. If you had the magic wand and did that, 500,000, if you make the squad, we'll just say you make the squad at 25, you get your 500,000. Do you think baseball would immediately be better?
I don't have any evidence behind it. I'm sure as we kind of work through it, we could think about why, but just the knee-jerk reaction is 1,000%.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking the same thing. I'm thinking I would go for that if that got proposed. That would be like a rule change I could go for.
Let me just ask you one question to kind of prove the point why it's so obvious. If every teacher from kindergarten to the end of high school in the entire country got paid $500,000, would the world be a better place?
I think while teachers in a fair society making similar to an athlete, I would say that would be good. But in a society ruled by entertainment, the thought I have is, if salaries were too high for teachers, people would get into it for the wrong reasons.
Okay, yeah.
That's what I was thinking. What were you thinking?
You know, I mean, you could say $1 million for baseball players. You could say 200,000. You find some, like, wage that's well beyond, like, the living wage.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is that if being a teacher was as a desirable position as being a Major League Baseball player from a financial standpoint, what type of people... You'd run into people on the street that would say, what do you want to do when you grow up? I want to be a teacher. And then what you would end up seeing is that there'd be competition, just like there is to be a great baseball player, to like educate themselves, to learn about like how youth education works and to become like a better teacher so that you could land a job as a teacher. There'd be a competition to be a teacher, and then you would lift each other up, and you'd have all these teachers that were really, it's like, well, what makes this teacher so good? It's like, oh man, you should see this youth program that they did, and they have all these different things, and they have all these different backgrounds, and they work extra hard in their off season to do this, this, and this. During the summer, they go and they get educated at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur to learn about like how children's brains develop at different ages. You know, rather than just kind of like, I'm mailing it in, like I get paid $60,000 a year as a teacher and I'm just getting by. I just think that you would see the same level of competition that is created by capitalism in sports, because I think America is pretty damn good at sports because of the way that we create superstars. Kids grow up wanting to be a professional sports player. And I think that if you did that with certain jobs like teaching, that you would have a similar level of competition. It would raise the entire game.
Yeah, I'm hearing where you're coming from, where there would be parents. Yeah, think of the number of parents that are going to their kid and reminding them how it's time to start training at age 6, 7, or 8 to be a great teacher. You know, you're going to be great one day and you're going to get through college and you get your credential. And by 25, like, you could actually be there. And training this kid to just be able to be a leader and lead by example in the way they live. Is that happening more, or are parents saying, we're going to get you in tennis lessons, you're going to be the best, we're going to get you into college, you're going to make a couple million, and that's important to us. Go ahead and get that scholarship. It's important to your family. Versus say, you're going to become such a wonderful teacher, you could change the world. It's probably, what, 50 to 1? Athlete to I'm raising a leader. Who doesn't want to be a superstar? When you were a kid, was being a professional athlete the ultimate goal?
Yeah, it was. And I look back on it, and I definitely don't think that everything that I did was like, oh, everybody should do what I do. I mean, there was a lot of things about growing up, playing a bunch of sports and then playing college golf and then playing professional golf that I kind of go like, wow, I feel so blessed that I could do that. And I think that that opportunity was a great opportunity, but I just don't think that it's, I mean, now, like, as I'm older, I kind of look back on it and I go, what would my life look like if I was an engineer? What would my life look like if I wanted to be a doctor or something like that? And it's just this interesting thing of, like, we all seek recognition and want to, like, create value for ourselves in the world or be, like, perceived as somebody that's successful. And I just don't think that it's necessarily healthy to think that sports are the vehicle for that. I mean, as I get older, I think about it and, like, what if your goal when you're a child was to be a hero in your own community? You know what I mean? Like, what could we do to foster that? It's not a Taylor Swift. It's not a Tiger Woods. It's like, what do we do so that you're a hero in your own community? I mean, you know, maybe you're a firefighter, maybe you're a police officer. I mean, maybe you're a really well-known teacher that people know and have had different generations go through and be in this teacher's class. And, you know, what if you created something for your community that they can enjoy? I just think that the world has gone too big with the way that the internet and television and everything works. And I think people are aiming too high and they're kind of forgetting about, like, be the hero in your own family. You know, like, you know, if you have aging parents, it's like, be there for them. Instead of thinking, well, I just want to be the best in the world at what I'm doing. It's like, you could just try to be one of the best or successful in your own community in whatever field that you choose. And I think the world would be a better place.
Right.
Do I get any notes?
We could go off the cuff.
You know, it's capitalism, right?
Here, it has some fun, eh?
Baseball. Well, we're lucky enough not to be at war.
Who doesn't want to be a superstar?
What is capitalism doing to these games that we love so much?